there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back to Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon.
And I'm Jeff Searcy.
Jeff, how you been?
Oh, you know, just living my life out here on Walton Street.
All right. I didn't know we were self-doxing on this episode.
Sorry.
They do call you the Beast, yeah, after all.
I was going to say, me and Brock Lesnar, we're the two beasts.
The two beasts.
The opposite ends of the spectrum for why we're called that.
Oh, watch out. Jeff's going to F5 that guy.
It's an F10 when I do.
Also, I've with John Cena retiring and all the bullshit about that, I do feel like it was lost when he changed the name of the move from the FU to the Attitude Adjustment. That the whole reason the move was called the FU was because Brock Lesnar did the F5.
Yeah. No, it did. It lost something.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Attitude Adjustment was a terrible name. The PG era was not great. Anyway. Save that for the wrestling podcast.
Yes, which of course we'll be doing soon.
Everyone does a wrestling podcast these days.
That'll be on the Patreon.
let's deck the halls for 2023, 2024. I don't know. The Beast of Walton Street.
I saw some reviews of it from 23, so it must have been available somewhere.
I have release date of June 9th, 2023, but I heard... I saw a couple things saying like 2024, so hard to say. Written and directed by Dusty Austin, who has a movie in post-production called What's Wrong with Wendy, which appears to be a vampire / Jennifer's body set at Valentine's Day. I don't know. Add it to the Valentine's Day list. The other writer is Athena Mirzda, and is going to be in What's Wrong with Wendy, and plays Constance Williamson in this movie, our main character. We've got Amy Lynn Chadwick as Gloria, who also appears in Return of the Living Dead, Rave to the Grave, and Return of the Living Dead, Necropolis. LaVale Duncan is Trusty, the drug dealer.
Yep.
James L. Edwards is Joseph Bradner and is also in Camp Blood Christmas. Mia Jones is Sketch, the best character in the movie. Mark Rossler is Ben Crosco and directed a horror short called Serial Santa. Chiles from The Thing shows up. Charles Mirzda is the Beast. Yvonne Newman is Debbie. Tim Navanti is Ralph and is in a short called Killer Christmas 2 Deadly Night. Aaron Pagniano is Annoyed Guy and was the cinematographer for this movie. And then Spooky Spring is Bar Patron.
I relate to Annoyed Guy.
Annoyed Guy was very funny. Like, we're going to get into it, but there are moments in this movie that, like, I really, really laughed at. I was like, that's really clever, like, really funny and well done.
Jay, there are moments in this movie when you forget it's a horror movie, which is one of the problems I'm going to bring up later.
Tagline, run like Howl. I think they should have gone with the Home Sweet Hell thing that's, like, on the side of the dumpster.
That graffiti would have been better, or, you know, something with the Walton Street thing, maybe.
Yeah. The Waltons are gonna put a Walmart on your street. There you go. IMDb reports the budget at $20,000. Filmed in Ohio, and this seems like, you know, a two front teeth situation where a bunch of friends in Ohio, probably in the Ohio movie scene, got together and made a movie. or in the like the Ohio horror movie scene or whatever. Yeah, so Two Front Teeth was the same way. It's a bunch of people from like Baltimore got together and made Two Front Teeth.
If only I could say this was a Two Front Teeth, Jay.
I mean, I wish. Jeff, we had a Two Front Teeth a little while ago. We had Arbor Day.
Yeah, I know.
It
all can't be an Arbor Day.
The thing I found out, that I didn't find this out till after watching the movie, and maybe would have made the movie make more sense, is apparently this is like the feature film of a web series.
Don't do that.
And so like the web series is like, hold on, I've got its name written down. Give me 1 second.
Okay, I'll vamp. If you're going to make a movie, if you're going to make a movie, do not make it contingent on having seen a web series or have read a book or anything else. A movie needs to stand alone.
The Haunted World of CW.
Ah.
Which then well, I thought
that's
was
just flat out confusing, Jay, because there's a network called CW.
That was the thought I had, too. I was like, oh, this has some connection to the CW. It does not. That's its own thing.
Is that what they call Columbus? Is it the CW?
But yeah, apparently this is, I couldn't get like a straight answer, but some of the stuff I found, like this is somehow, either this is like a direct sequel to it or this exists in the same universe. But I think that would, if we had watched that, that would have explained more, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch a thing.
Battlestar Galactica, the TV show from 2003, tried this 20 years before and it also did not work. They also did web series episodes you're supposed to watch in between episodes, and no one watched them.
And then they had that other that spinoff show with Patton, where
Caprica, which there was, you go. Which was actually a good show, but got canceled because again nobody watched it. It's almost like you should not assign your viewer homework that they need to do to enjoy your product.
Did Heroes also do a web series? I think Heroes also did a web
series. Heroes also did. Although I will say to Heroes' credit, they were like side plots or whatever that didn't really matter to the main story, so it's kind of just like bonus content. But Battlestar Galactica tried to make it tied into the main thing for you to understand like the plot in next week's episode, and then they just had to do away with it and explain what happened in it in the episode anyway.
It's like an AR, yeah, like yeah. They're trying to ARG or multi-screen or whatever. Yeah,
it's like people don't want to do that.
When back to wrestling chat real fast, when Bray Wyatt was coming back and then passed away, and then they did the Wyatt Six or whatever. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff with that was like ARG, like you gotta go to websites and do. And I'm just and I had some friend like explaining to me as though it were cool, and I'm like, but I don't want to do homework to watch my wrestling. Yes. Like I've got no issue going out to Google if someone new shows up that I've never heard of and maybe watching like some highlights of them or whatever. But I'm not gonna like go to this website and plug in this code to figure out like I'm like, no, go fuck yourself. Yes.
Well, it's kind of like how now the Star Wars prequels have been rehabilitated by all the books and shows and everything that have been put out in the meantime. But you can't say that makes the movies good, because if you haven't seen that stuff, the movies still suck.
Yeah, the movies are still real bad.
So, yes.
Also, speaking of Star Wars, there's some Star Wars chat in this movie.
There is.
Where to watch, stream it on Tubi. Yes. You can get a Blu-ray copy from Scream Team Releasing. One thing I will say about the Blu-ray that was very fun is all of the like title screens and stuff are, I believe, the director talking you through all the different like things on the screen. It was very funny. Like that was very well done.
That does sound fun.
Don't really have any personal experience. Saw this pop up that Scream Team Releasing was putting it out, and that's pretty much it.
You said, "Hey Jeff, there's a Christmas werewolf movie, and we should watch it." And I was like, "That sounds cool, Jay." Little did I know that there's barely any werewolf and barely any Christmas.
Well, Jeff, just wait for July. We'll get some more Christmas werewolves.
God, I hope so.
Let's dive in for our synopsis. We see a homeless man named Ralph walk down an alley with some stores that are decorated for Christmas. It's kind of a rainy Christmas at the moment, and he finds a spot next to a dumpster that says "Home Sweet Home," like written in graffiti, but the second home is scratched out and it says "Home Sweet Hell." Ew. And he's like, "Home Sweet Hell, I'll drink to that."
God, and was he, do you think he was ADR'd or was his mic just weird?
I think there's a lot of ADR in this movie.
Because it's like his several points where his lips did not match up with what he was saying.
Noises start coming out of the dumpster, and the man thinks his friend Andrew is fucking someone in the dumpster, and basically says, when you get your dick cut off, I'm not taking you to the hospital, you dirty dicked motherfucker.
And you get an infection in your dick, Jay, I'm not taking you to the emergency room. Also, how hard does his friend normally fuck people? Because it sounds like something is being bashed against the wall over and over again.
And he goes up to look in the dumpster to, I guess, see the fucking going on. And instead of fucking, he sees blood and something moving, and then he gets hauled in, opening credits and title card. The opening credits play over like a 90s style, like girl band almost song,
yeah.
Playing. And we see Constance, our main character, use a money shark, which I assume is like a game shark, to steal from an ATM.
Pro tip, kids, you can't do that.
We get a news broadcast about all the homeless people missing on Walton Street, and tons of Christmassy imagery is also interspiced with these things during these opening credits.
That was one thing that is really going to pull me out of the movie later, that news report about all the homeless people missing, and then later on, no one even cares that all these homeless people are missing.
Yeah, they're talking about like 36 yes. homeless people have gone missing.
And I'm like, even the most lazy, flat-footed police department, if 36 people have been turned into hamburger by a wolf prowling the street, I'm pretty sure they're going to check it out.
Constance is going to like a hospital, a pharmacy, a clinic of some kind. It's unclear.
I took it as like maybe like a free clinic or something like that.
But she gets stopped by Trusty, the drug dealer, who she calls a toilet bowl drug bitch because he does PCP.
Yeah. I always love to backtalk guys who are on PCP, Jay, because they're famously rational and very pain averse.
And I don't know. He's like trying to mug her or something, but she just kind of outsmarts him.
Well, that's the whole, he's like, yeah, why don't we go to my car? Oh, yeah, which one's your car?
The black one. Also, he keeps looking at the camera.
Yes.
And, like, it not consistently, but, like, a couple times, like, he kind of, like, just stares right down the camera. And I'm like, dude, you're not supposed to do that.
It's funny because I do like his performance, but yes, he does tend to look at the camera.
Constance goes into this pharmacy clinic hospital place where she is ignored by the people who are running it, and then she just hops onto the desk and steals the drug she needed, I guess.
And it's still unclear what exactly the medication is for.
She
has cancer, but what pills help you with cancer?
I assume pain pills, but that's not what keeps you alive. I don't know. We get a montage as she is then chased by a security guard through the streets. And then the music abruptly stops when the security guard gets hit by a car and the driver 80 yard in,
yes,
very loudly says, "Stay off the road, asshole," and drives away.
I mean, in fairness, he was in the middle of the road. He just ran straight across without even looking. But yeah, that was one of my laugh out loud moments to begin with. It was when he goes flying.
Constance wants to check on him, but then she hears sirens start to wail and she runs off. Constance arrives at her residence.
I guess, like an abandoned body shop, basically. But yep. Yes, I thought it was very funny the way she runs away from the sirens. Like, oh yeah, they're going to think that this 5-foot-tall girl ran him over with her non-existent vehicle. What's she running away for?
Especially because he's probably dead. Yeah. He's not going to answer anything.
Like, he was clearly just hit by a car.
But yeah, it's this old, like, yeah, abandoned, like you said, body shop mechanics.
Something.
And there are just piles and piles of, like, dog dishes, cat dishes out front because she feeds the local stray cat population.
Again, that's something that would definitely be drawing attention from like animal control, because they're in a city. They'd be like, why the hell are all these stray cats congregating over here?
We are introduced to Sketch, her best friend / roommate, who is very Stevie Carnarvon from Malcolm in the Middle coded for me. And they quote Star Wars at each other.
Of course they do.
Don't tell me the odds and watch it, fuzzball.
Yes.
I
was hoping she was going to do I'd Rather Kiss a Wookiee.
But hey, at least they're quoting the original trilogy. That's so true. So right on. And Sketch talks about how Constance is pining after her girlfriend who left her and is at some prep school of some kind.
Yes, apparently she's at a private school that doesn't allow you to visit someone, I guess. I don't know.
Is it a military school? I was like, is it secretly a rehab? And she's like telling people it's a school because she doesn't want people.
But then later on the flyer, it says school.
Right.
And it seems just like a regular building. So.
And also, neither of them look school aged. They both look
like adults.
Adult. Yeah. I don't know. Constance and Sketch go to get some food. And then Constance basically dine and dashes her way out of paying by convincing the entire restaurant that it is the waitress's birthday.
Yes,
and my favorite thing is when they're leaving, you can hear like somebody in people in Stein still singing happy birthday.
Well, originally she was going to go with the mutant raccoon in the bathroom angle, but that one didn't quite work.
Yes. I guess now's the time to bring it up. So all these people have gone missing, and they're originally reporting that it's raccoons are killing people.
The explanation for 36 people going missing, Jay, is that a gang of rabid raccoons is prowling the city and eating people, I guess.
And then Sketch is just constantly trying to find a logical non-werewolf explanation for...
I mean, honestly, it's like the first thing your mind would jump to in a werewolf situation would be bear. That would be my most common thing.
But they go raccoon, bear, dingo.
Yes. We're going back down the size spectrum to a dingo.
But also, what I believe dingoes are scavengers.
They are scavengers. They are opportunistic predators like coyotes, but they're also confined to Australia.
I don't know how a dingo got loose in Ohio.
In Ohio, I would guess probably coyote before I would guess dingo. Which, I mean, there are some big, mean coyotes. That's not impossible.
Constance and Sketch talk about what they heard went down with Ralph on Walton Street and how they should avoid Walton Street and then immediately wind up on Walton Street.
As like, what the... you guys live on the streets and you don't know what street you're on?
And then something starts moving in the alley and chasing after them, some kind of beast.
Very slowly, this beast approaches.
As they run away, they go to hop a fence to get away from it, and Sketch drops the pills that
are keeping her alive, Constance, I guess.
Got for her, yep.
Yes, the beast. Luckily, Jay, even though the beast seems to shamble awkwardly, it has the power of jump cutting. And it's right behind them when the camera switches.
They go back to the clinic to try to get some more pills and loudly talk in the waiting room about werewolves and Sketch's boobs. And this is where Annoyed Guy pops up, who's just constantly confused by this conversation.
Rolling his fucking eyes like, God, can't you people? She's probably there like for some kind of treatment because he's like, you know, poor. He's at the free clinic. And these girls just keep babbling about what they think this monster might be and how one of their tits is smashed and deformed. Eventually he goes up to the counter to try to get help, and then they make him stand behind the line.
They yell at him, you're supposed to stand behind the line! The sign's there for a reason! Another very fun moment in this movie.
Which is like, this is more of a buddy movie / comedy than it is a horror movie or werewolf movie, honestly.
Back at the mechanics, they are still arguing about the werewolf, and Constance has a book of folklore and eventually convinces Sketch that they should become werewolf hunters, because what else is Sketch going to do? Die?
Yes.
Might as well die nobly fighting werewolves.
They proceed to become werewolf hunters, yet she reads the book and has none of the things she needs to be a werewolf hunter, but decides to do it anyway.
Jeff, don't worry. These werewolves can be killed with sticks.
Well, certainly they can be spooked by a stick. When that happened, I was like, so what the fuck is the threat with these werewolves? Just beat it. Which, I mean, that's what she does.
They go back to the alley on Walton Street, and Constance is going to go into the dumpster.
No, Jay, you'll get AIDS. Stop.
And thinks about licking the dumpster juice. But Sketch is like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm trying to figure out if it's pasta sauce or blood. By licking it? Yeah, they do it in the movies. Yeah, in the movies, they don't get AIDS.
Which, fun fact, kids, AIDS has to enter your bloodstream. So unless your mouth is full of open sores, you're not going to get AIDS from licking blood.
And also, I don't know how long, I guess I could look it up. I'm not sure how long AIDS can last outside the human body.
I don't think it also lives very long outside the body. But even so, you could drink a gallon of AIDS blood and it wouldn't do anything to you. It has to get into your bloodstream. which is why the most common way is sharing needles with someone who has it.
HIV typically dies within minutes to a few hours outside the body. Yeah. It probably would have been fine. Would have still been gross. Don't lick random dumpster juice.
Don't go around drinking blood, yes, but yeah, it's not going to give you AIDS. No, Jay, watching the Beast of Walton Street is what gives you AIDS.
And then... Sketch can't hold also, why are we having the cancer patient hold up the non-cancer patient?
That was my very first thought when I saw that. I'm like, what the hell? You should be propping her up there.
So Sketch is holding Constance up, but can't do it anymore because she has cancer. And so she like stumbles, which causes Constance to fall in and get covered in bloody dumpster juice.
Yes.
And inside she finds like bones that have been picked clean, human remains.
Yes, interesting.
Oh, and also to get out, I forgot to. This part is actually important. To get Constance out of the dumpster, Sketch has to use her bra to pull her out. Which one? How well made is this bra that it can haul a whole human being out of a dumpster?
I have seen bras broken by accident before, Jay, so I don't know where this bra came from.
Right?
I do not think any bra I've ever seen would hold the weight of a full-grown person.
But somehow it works, but then we get this great moment where Constance tries to give it back to her, and she's like, no. So Constance tosses it into the dumpster. That will come back.
Yes, it will come back, because it turns out the werewolf's a freak.
Back at the mechanics, Sketch smokes outside as Constance watches a VHS her girlfriend made for her. Sketch notices that none of the cats are outside. And we, at first I thought we saw a pair of like, glowing orbs behind her, but it turns out that I'm pretty sure those are just lights on a nearby house. But I was like, oh, very cool. Glowing yellow wolf eyes.
That did catch my eye too. But yeah, I think it was just porch lights, but that was something that made me wonder. So did she get cancer from smoking, or is she smoking cause she doesn't give a fuck cause she has cancer?
I assume it's the second one, but hard to say. Sketch then continues to kind of search around until she finds a bunch of animal carcasses, mostly all the cats that have been eaten.
Weird.
Sketch runs back inside and hides under a blanket sobbing until Constance finds her. They go back outside and they find Sketch's bra from earlier, proof that they were tracked home.
And then, of course, we get the classic riff, don't touch me, you'll get AIDS.
They get chased by the werewolf, but Sketch trips and is dragged away screaming.
Loosely chased.
They meander away from the werewolf. Constance finds the werewolf about to eat Sketch, but Constance stabs it in the eye with a stick and it runs off.
I was going to say, which is apparently enough to deter it.
And then kill it, I guess?
I guess, because... See, that's going to bring up something later, but I was like, okay, so you got rid of one, but the whole thing you set up was that there's two, and that never gets addressed. And I wouldn't think getting stabbed in the eye would be enough to kill something, because I don't think there is a stick strong enough to pierce the skull, because you do have bone behind your eye.
Right. But somehow stabbing this werewolf in the eye killed it.
I guess, unless there's just another Beast of Walton Street still out there.
Unless... Yeah, you know, what Jeff, there is. She gets Sketch to the mechanic shop where Sketch falls asleep, and Constance goes back to the dumpster to finish the job, where she finds the beast dead in the dumpster and takes a picture of it.
See, this was the thing that really got me was, okay, you guys just went through this traumatic thing. Why not wait a little bit? Make sure your friend is okay before you just randomly leave.
There's no sense of like how much time has passed. There will like be things where they're like, we did that yesterday, and it's like, but it feels like it's the exact same day that it was. Yes,
there is pacing and time is a big issue.
Sketch finds the picture and a note from Constance about the dead werewolf, and that Constance is going to her girlfriend's prep school. Constance steals a car, and Sketch puts on music and starts doodling. That's why her nickname is Sketch. Not a care in the world because the werewolf is dead, except there's a second werewolf and it attacks Sketch and tries to fight back, but it like rips her arm off and we get like blood splatter and all sorts of good gore in this one scene.
This seemed way out of place just based on how her character behaved in the rest of the movie. it's like, wouldn't she be a little bit more like traumatized or whatever by everything that's happened?
Now she's just, I mean, free.
She's fine. She's dancing. Everything's fine now, even though the beast has only been dead for maybe a day or a few hours. It's hard to tell.
Constance takes the stolen car and finds her girlfriend Gloria's school is closed down.
Yes, the school closed apparently in between these events. But also, why did she need a car?
That's my biggest thing. What is the sense of size in this in this area, like, or in this world? Because she needed a car to do this, but they're constantly walking back and forth from Walton Street as though it's nothing.
And clearly they must be somewhere on the outskirts of town, their home base mechanic shop or whatever, because otherwise people would know they were there. I don't know. There's a weird post-apocalyptic feel to this movie where there's like barely any people anywhere.
It reminded me of one of those YouTube shows where it's like the person's like the last person alive or whatever.
Or only 7 people live in this town.
She goes back to the mechanic shop and finds Sketch's dead body. We then get a cleaning stuff up montage. As Constance picks up the shop and makes a little grave for Sketch and mourns Sketch's passing.
And you also see the comically huge amount of cat crosses there.
I thought that was very funny. Yeah, all the tiny cat crosses. Sketch's giant cross and all the tiny cat crosses. Constance, with a bat, goes back to Walton Street and runs into Trusty, who offers her some PCP. And I'm unclear if she takes it or not.
I think she does.
And then they talk about the werewolf, and Trusty says that it's Andrew, who was the guy that Ralph was yelling at from earlier.
How does he know that? Two, how the fuck did he become a werewolf?
Jeff, those are both excellent questions. And then, but Constance knows that it's not.
He didn't have a Andrew dick,
because
man.
It didn't have a dick, because when the werewolf was on top of Sketch was like, I didn't feel a penis. It was a girl werewolf.
Of course. Werewolves remain anatomically correct.
And that's when Trusty says, well, they did bump uglies, and I mean ugly, because we're talking, he had this girlfriend named Wendy.
Ooh.
Wendigo. back at the mechanics, Constance waits, and eventually Andrew the werewolf shows up. Constance the werewolf fight around the mechanic shop, and she is eventually able to trap it in the garage door and then bashes its skull repeatedly with the baseball bat.
It would have been hilarious if the garage door had the safety feature, which they all have, like in professional shops and stuff, where if it has something under it, it won't close.
Right.
And then the werewolf just gets up and eats her.
Well, initially, I thought on my first watch, not my third watch, I was like, oh, is the garage door going to decapitate the werewolf? But then you watch how slow it comes down that I'm like, well, I hope they don't do that. At least they didn't do that part.
I suppose.
It went, Jeff, not only did it go down slow, I was watching it 1.5 speed, and I thought it went down slow watching it on 1.5
speed. Oh, on normal speed, Jay, it is comically slow. In fact, the werewolf could have gotten up, smoked a cigarette, laid back down, and still had time to get crushed by the door.
The next day, back on Walton Street, Constance hauls a bag of trash filled with what's left of Andrew the werewolf, and her and Trusty toss it in the dumpster, and then she lights it on fire. Trusty tells Constance wherever she goes to beware of monsters, and she says she plans on it. Credits roll, end of movie.
Which, for someone who was worried earlier about having the cops hassle them, maybe carrying around bags of decapitated animal parts, probably not the best thing to do in town, but like we said, apparently no one lives here, so it was fine.
There's implied cops. We never actually see the cops.
And see, I think that would have made the message of the movie a lot stronger, because there's some heavy-handed messaging in this movie. And, you know, to have at least one cop, I mean, it wouldn't be that crazy. You can get a cop uniform pretty cheap, get an actor, have them go report it or whatever, and he's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, werewolves,
huh? You guys are crazy, whatever.
Kids on drugs.
Yeah, we'll check it out, maybe never. Something like that, you know, probably would have added a little impact to the message. But no, they never even try to tell anybody. Which, I mean, they wouldn't have to, because it's on the news, and 36 people are missing, okay? It's not like a couple homeless guys have disappeared. When the number of people missing reaches the double digits, whether they're homeless or not, that does kind of trigger a response.
Especially in, like, what is probably a very short amount of time.
Yes. I would have had to have been. And yet, and I mean, the bigger elephant in the room, a lot of times some of the homeless guys you see shuffling around in a major city are cops.
Oh, man. This werewolf knew just enough not to...
Yes. He never targeted a cop by accident or killed anybody where anybody would miss them or saw them disappear or anything like that. Or, you know, you think if you killed 36 people, a cop might just stumble on one by accident, especially in a medium-sized city.
Well, but this city is of undetermined size.
I mean...
Where sometimes it's a small town of 7 people, and sometimes it's a large, bustling metropolis.
Yes, I was going to say, I guess it just depends on what day you're in town, Jay, how many people are there.
They all left for Christmas vacation. Turns out the whole city closed down for Christmas break.
Fun fact, Columbus actually closes for Christmas. Everybody goes to Dayton.
Oh, well, which category do you want to start with?
You know what? Let's talk about sets, costumes.
All right, Christmas wrapping. So I can't, Jeff, I can't tell you how good or bad the werewolf truly looked, because they do an excellent job of obscuring a lot of it, which, you know, is actually pretty solid camera work on their part.
Yes. He's also barely in the movie, so that helps too.
Yep. Like, but it's a lot of like being hidden in shadows, or you see its legs, or you see its mouth, or you see its eyes. Yep. Like the couple times you do see like full werewolf, even though it's in shadow, it's pretty goofy looking. I was going to say
some of the running scenes are pretty awkward. And when you get like some of the shots of its head from the side where the mouth is clearly fixed, like a fixed thing or whatever. Yeah, it doesn't look great. But for the most part, I mean, obviously, it's not a crazy budget movie or anything. It's basically like a hobbyist movie almost. I thought they did a decent job.
I heard a recent interview with Steve Kostansky, the creator of Psycho Gorman, one of my favorite movies. Mm. And he said that werewolf transformations, everybody wants a werewolf transformation in their werewolf movie. That is the most expensive part of the whole goddamn movie.
You see, I actually do not want a werewolf transformation in my movie because it's only ever been done good twice, and both of them were expensive movies.
Yep.
All the other ones pretty much suck. I'd say American Werewolf in London.
Yep. And probably the greatest one.
The Underworld movies are pretty much the only two good examples of werewolf transformation.
Trick or Treat has pretty good werewolf transformation.
It's not bad, yeah.
That was the one I was thinking of.
A lot of it is off screen, though, which they kind of cheat a little bit, but I mean, they had to because they didn't have that much money for each individual segment. But
Jeff can't really promote sets. I thought the shop was cool. Yeah. I think that was neat.
The shop I did like, but it's also kind of indeterminate size because it seems a lot bigger than it was at the beginning when they do the final fight scene. The alley and the dumpster, I guess it was a pretty good set. Like I like the dumpster being super tall, so they have to like try to climb in there and look or whatever, and you can't see what's inside. But yeah, not a whole lot to note. Like the diner was pretty generic. The clinic or whatever it was supposed to be was pretty generic. I mean, not a lot of Christmas. Basically, you get your biggest dose of Christmas at the very beginning when you're going down that alley.
Yep. I will say they at least have their shop decorated for Christmas, like which looks okay. And then like you said, the beginning, and there's the like walking around the streets, you get lots of like kind of
shop windows
and stuff with Christmas stuff. I think there was a Dreamcast even in one of those shop windows.
I believe so, which raises again more questions.
Yeah, when was this? When is this supposed to be? I don't know. Sketch was my favorite character. I don't know if that is.
I say out of the two main characters, I think Sketch had a more compelling presence.
And I thought Sketch was the one who had not necessarily the funnier dialogue, but like had the funnier reactions. I think certainly had a bit more comedic timing down. I the actors who played Constance, I don't think has very good. It certainly did not appear to have very good comedic timing in this movie. I felt watching it, I was kind of like, her deliveries were always kind of like, oh, that's a funny line, but it would be funnier if it was delivered better. I felt like Sketch actually did have some good line delivery.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else?
I mean, we talked a little bit about the gore, but I thought some of the gore effects were pretty good. Some of them were not very good. It was kind of uneven. But I think when
like the bones were straight, the picked clean bones were straight out of like Spirit Halloween.
It's like the kind of shit I get at the Dollar Tree to put in the graveyard in my front yard for Halloween.
But like the Sketch's arm getting ripped off looked great. Yes. Like,
I'd say uneven effects, but not all bad.
Oh, I had one more thing. Nope, can't remember it.
Well, it must not have been that important.
Should have written it down. You want to do Christmas Spirit, How Christmassy Was the Movie, How Christmassy Are the Kids? We're kind of leaning in that direction anyway.
Yeah, we might as well. We started talking about it.
Anyway. Movie. There are Christmas decorations in a lot of scenes. Like, that stuff feels very Christmassy, but like the story doesn't really itself to being Christmassy.
It's got nothing to do with Christmas.
It could take place at any time.
The outside scenes, while they try to make it feel wintry because they wear winter coats or whatever, doesn't really seem like winter. You don't really feel a lot of Christmas.
No, it doesn't. It's not over. And the only thing I could think of to like maybe make it Christmassy was maybe it's the whole like the same thing with Good Tidings, where it's, you know, Christmas is hard on the homeless population. And maybe that was kind of the thought process. But I was like, even then, like, I think Good Tidings did that better than this does.
I was going to say, for a movie that's leaning so heavily into messaging, they really don't take a whole lot of time to discuss anything like that.
The kills, though, not at all. These are probably some of the least Christmassy kills we've gotten.
We barely see any kills actually happen. I mean, we get like, what, one maybe?
I think of the four kills, we actually see Sketch kind of get killed.
Yes, we see like half of Sketch's death, and that's about it. But I mean, we get none of the 36 other people that have apparently been eaten by these beasts.
I do think when Constance traps Andrew or whatever, she uses Christmas lights to kind of wrap around Werewolf Andrew's neck to get him in between the garage door or whatever. Would have been more apparent exactly what she was using if those lights had been plugged in.
Yeah. Now, see, this is what I thought. I thought maybe we were going to get a twist like Wolf of Snow Hollow, where the drug dealer from the beginning, because she's like, oh, they made a big point to say he's on PCP or whatever. I was like, is he going to be like dressing up in a weird costume and just going around murdering people?
Or is just straight up the werewolf?
He could have been the werewolf too. Because they really leaned into the whole, oh, yes, it's a werewolf, let's move along or whatever, we don't need to explain this thing. So I'm like, maybe it's not actually a werewolf. But no, it's actually a werewolf. It's some guy named Andrew we never met. But yeah.
Everyone's talking about this Andrew guy, but I've never seen him.
And apparently he has a girlfriend that's kind of ugly that we've also never seen.
They're bumping uglies.
And I mean ugly.
All right, well, that's, since we're quoting Christmas Carol, favorite quotes.
Well, Jay, I'm all out of meth and crack and pot, but I do have some PCP for you.
You get your dick cut off and you get an infection. The doctor is out. That's Ralph. Ralph again. All right, you dirty slime ball, you dirty dick sack of shit, I'm coming up there. That's Ralph. And then Ralph one more time. This ain't no goddamn raccoon, as Ralph is getting hauled into the dumpster and mauled by the werewolf.
I also had this ain't no goddamn raccoon.
Guy who randomly hit the security guard with his car. Stay off the road, asshole.
I had that, yes.
And then a lot of Constance and Sketch talking to each other. I'm concerned that when you get scared, you clench your vagina hard. This is Constance. And then Sketch says, what, and you don't? And then Constance says, not that hard. And then they're constantly like, did your uterus pop out? Clench your vagina so hard, your uterus popped out?
The conversation in the clinic. When I fell, my boob popped out to the side. I need you to look at it. I'm not going to look at it. Of course, eventually she goes over and looks at it. Oh, God, it's horrible.
I got one. Right. We just got chased by a fucking werewolf, and you want me to look at your boobs, Constance? And then Sketch says, it's not a damn peep show, Constance. Another reference to Sketch's boobs. Push your chest out. Look confident. Sketch does. Okay, I didn't say rocket your boobs forward.
Well, I mean, what else is she supposed to do?
And then the last one I have is, that's what they do in the movies. They do the blood taste test. And Sketch goes, that's because it's fake and it's not AIDS blood in the movies.
Oh yeah. So I don't want to, you know, maybe we shouldn't talk about this out here. You know, maybe we should talk about it with your manager. There was a raccoon in the bathroom. A raccoon. Big one.
One of those mutant raccoons that have been going around.
I mean, some of the dialogue is pretty awkward in this, especially the delivery from some of these people who are clearly not actors. But I thought our drug dealer trustee's delivery was pretty good, even though, like we said, he looks at the camera all the time.
Like, Jeff, it was, and like maybe the idea was supposed to be that he was like looking for his car. But I think there's at least three times in that scene where he just stares down the camera lens for a second.
I was going to say, in the alley when he's giving her the drugs, he also looks at the camera.
And I was just like, why are you staring at me? You're making me uncomfortable. Broken bulb, brilliant bulb. One thing you want to fix, one thing you want to praise, Jeff.
All right, well, we got to fix the story on this thing, Jay. We start off with, okay, we've got a girl, and she's homeless, and she's getting medicine for her friend. And we go back, and then they immediately switch to, oh, yes, my girlfriend is locked up in some kind of private school that won't, apparently, even though we all look like adults, won't let her leave or talk to anybody or do anything outside of it.
That's why I thought it was gonna wind up being some kind of medical facility, but no, it says school.
And then we're going to go dine and dash, and then we're going to have our obligatory werewolf encounter, even though we specifically say, okay, let's make sure we don't go to Walton Street. Because everything in the movie's been saying, oh, yes, people have disappeared on Walton Street. 36 people are dead and still nobody's investigating this.
Not one person's gone to Walton Street to figure out what's going on.
Apparently, Walton Street's a no-go zone for the cops in this town. But yes, then somehow they wind up on Walton Street, even though they supposedly live on the streets here. And at that point, they get chased by the werewolf, and then they immediately go back and immediately believe that that's what it was. And then they're like, okay, so I guess now we become werewolf hunters for no particular reason. And then apparently the werewolf in that time has killed every single one of their stray cats and left the corpses strewn around the woods, and then decides to try to eat one of them. Is fended off with a stick somehow. Then the werewolves disappear from the movie for about 20 minutes while they do other stuff. And then the werewolf kills her friend. For apparently no reason, I guess, because you think it would be after Constance, because she's the one who killed the other werewolf, but apparently doesn't care about Constance at all. And then they have their big showdown at the end after she gets hopped up on PCP from her drug dealer friend.
And then Constance just leaves.
She leaves town for no particular reason, doesn't bother to try to figure out what happened to her girlfriend or anything else. And also the unresolved thing of there's possibly another werewolf out there somewhere. Because even if she killed that one with the stick to the eye and the one with the baseball bat, who made them werewolves?
Right. There should certainly be more werewolves out there.
Is that the secret of the town? Everybody else is a werewolf?
They've all been werewolves the whole time.
See, that would have been an interesting twist. No one's investigating the Beast of Walton Street because everybody's a werewolf.
They're all the Beast of Walton Street.
That would be hilarious if everybody is a werewolf. But yes, no, we got to fix this story. Because that, even though I was able to string it together in a description, it does not feel like that is even what's happening in the movie. It's like almost like a series of vignettes from disconnected movies.
And no, it does. A lot of it does just feel like here's a scene. Here's a different scene with some of the same characters, but no context. Here's another scene with some of the same characters, but no context about why they're here.
Here's a scene where we're going to reference something that happened, but we don't even know the people involved, so who even cares? It was like what's supposed to be the big... By the way, her girlfriend, that's a bad acting on that videotape.
The girlfriend, the whole girlfriend plotline... might be my biggest fix. Just remove that all from the movie.
Honestly, I think if they had just sat down, written a story that was two friends try to get help for a werewolf that's killing homeless people, no one will help them, they have to end up solving the problem themselves, and highlight the hardships of being homeless and the tragedy of her friend dying without the proper medical care or whatever. And then maybe have, like, her friend sacrifices herself to save Constance because she's going to die anyway. So she's like, you know, you have a chance to live, so I'm going to sacrifice myself to save you. Something like that.
Yep. Have Sketch's death mean something.
Yes, instead of just being random, I think would have made this movie a lot more impactful.
I had a just on the off chance that you had been like, if you had said Gloria is my fix, get rid of the whole girlfriend storyline. The other thing that I've mentioned, the sense of scale for this world.
Yes.
Sometimes, you know, they imply that multiple days have gone by, even though it's been literally the previous scene. They are constantly walking back and forth to Walton Street. How far is this from places? How far is their shop from places? Like, none of this makes sense.
I mean, for them to be squatting in a place and running a generator and stuff like that, it has to be fairly far from town. Otherwise, they would surely be detected by the cops and shoot out of there like cops do. So that's the whole thing that makes it even harder to believe. It's like they never once get moved along by any cops or anything.
No, they're just constantly going from place to place to place. And it's like, so are all these places next to each other? But you've implied that days have passed, mm-hmm. So are they not? Well, and then the whole fucking, how fucking far is Gloria's school from this fucking? Yes.
See, and that's the problem that, like, movies like The Wolf of Snow Hollow solve by being set in a small mountain community or whatever, where everything is basically snowed in right together. So it's easier to believe that a guy could dress up like a werewolf and go around and murder some people.
Right.
And not be immediately caught. But this is, like, in a city, in a modern American city, even though if we think it's supposed to be the 90s, maybe, but there's Amazon boxes and a guy has a cell phone.
It feels very 90s coded, even if it's not the 90s.
And there's a videotape made for some reason.
And there was like a CRT TV or whatever, yeah. Like tubes as opposed to flat screen.
I don't know.
Like
maybe this is a Lee Cronin situation and this town is actually in Egypt today, Jay, which everyone knows is stuck in the 1980s.
Brilliant bulb thing you want to praise.
I want to praise the performances of our drug dealer, Trusty, Sketch was probably the best. I agree with you. The best actor in this. And, whoever, I don't remember what his name is, but the guy who played the Beast.
Okay.
Because I know suit acting is already hard to begin with. And this suit was clearly not optimized to be easy to act in. I'm guessing you could not see out of that thing. And it looked heavy and bulky.
I felt like hot and sweaty just yes. Watching this guy run around on all fours yes. In a werewolf suit.
So props to him for that. Even though, like we said, Trusty spends like, I don't know, half of his screen time looking at the camera. It's not that bad. But yes, he looks at the camera several times.
Like I said, it's just enough where I went, this is making me uncomfortable. Why do you keep looking at me?
But he comes across in a genuine way that some of the other people don't. Like, Debbie does not come across as genuine.
I doubt she was an actor. If yes. She was an actor, I'd be shocked.
The girlfriend does not come across as genuine. She's trying very hard to act dramatic and sad. Sketch is definitely, I think, the standout performance. Even because I saw some people who are like, oh, her dialogue is terrible. It's cringy. It's like, yeah, but that's not her fault. I mean, she seems like a believable character, which is the actor's job. They can't choose what they say. So I would give my shout out to that.
My praise would be, while that dialogue wasn't always great and was a little cringy at times, I did feel like the... overall, like, I enjoyed I think a lot of it was down to like delivery more than it was to the lines.
Yeah.
Because there's some really, really funny moments. There's some really funny, like, you know, lines where it's like out of context. That's a real funny thing to say. It's just, it wasn't delivered very well. Like,
one of my favorites that was delivered well that I forgot to mention earlier was, so when she's climbing up to investigate, when she finds the other werewolf dead in there or whatever, and Trusty's just like sitting there against the wall, and he just casually looks over and he's like, "That's how you get age, you know."
No, I thought that was going back to
the early, and he delivered it perfectly naturally, like just deadpan. I was like, "That was a great delivery."
Because that's all we're fucking talking about is. people, but dirty dicked motherfuckers getting AIDS in the dumpster.
Exactly.
But yeah, I thought like over, like I enjoyed the dialogue. It wasn't the best, but like it was, there were funny moments and I feel like it was more let down. Like I said, it was more let down. Just
story let it down.
The story definitely. Let it down. And I think some of the actors let it down.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our final rating. Every episode of Horror for the Holidays, we rate our movie on one of three categories. Is it ho 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 hilarious? Is it seasonally scary? Or is it you will be sorry? The dreaded you will be sorry. Jeff?
I had a hard time rating this one because I was like, there are definitely things I like in it. But if I'm evaluating it on our own criteria, which of course we have to stick to because we made it up.
Yeah, we made this is our hill and these are our beans.
I'm going to have to rate it a you'll be sorry because the story is not very engaging. There is little Christmas in this. There's little in the way of horror kills in this movie. It's just, I don't think, unless you are like a diehard werewolf fan, I don't think there's going to be much in this for you. And even then.
Which I know you are.
Yes. I love werewolves and there's barely any werewolf in this. I mean, honestly, I don't, like I said, it's just because we have the three rating categories we can go with. I don't think it's funny enough to be ho-ho hilarious. It's not good enough to be our highest rating. So I'm going to have to go with You'll Be Sorry.
I want to start off. I don't think this movie was for me. Like, I don't think this movie was made for people like you and me who, you know, watch all sorts of bad, weird movies. I think this movie was very, like, to me, felt like it was very clearly made by and for people who grew up in the 90s who love Goosebumps, especially the TV show, because this felt like an hour and 30 minute Goosebumps episode with adult themed dialogue and some like adult themed kills. But this felt way more like a Goosebumps book or a Goosebumps TV episode than it ever, like an episode of R.L. Stine's The Haunting Hour, than it ever actually felt like a rated R horror movie that I'm watching on Tubi.
Do you know the most prominent werewolf Goosebumps, Jay?
Beast of Fever Swamp or whatever?
That's the one.
Which, hey, maybe that's...
I was going to say, watch that. Watch the Beast of Fever Swamp.
But yeah, all that to say, I went into watching this for my third time in 2 weeks, prepared to give it a You'll Be Sorry. But I did find enough kind of moments that made me chuckle that I was like, personally, I would give this a light ho-ho-ho hilarious. But I think there are people out there who love the Goosebumps who would get so much more out of this movie than you or I would. And I think that was kind of my biggest takeaway. Things I would have liked better, like I said, remove the whole Gloria subplot from the movie, and put in more werewolfing, or like you said, have a thing, have them some kind of police accomplice who's kind of like maybe trying to help them. Yeah. And but then like they keep getting shut down where it's like I can't be telling my superiors that there's a werewolf out there.
Yeah.
Or have more werewolfing, or like I said, make this like a 45 minute short.
See,
and I think that would have breezed by and I think 45 minutes would remove the entire Gloria thing.
Yes. Honestly, I think if this had been a short film, like 45 minutes to like maybe even an hour, I think it would have been better, but the padding and the pacing issues they have to introduce to make it that hour and a half feature length really does hurt it.
But yeah, if you're the kind of person who when you hear bum 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 doo-loom, bum 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 the Goosebumps theme, if you hear that theme, watch, that's not even what the Goosebumps theme sounds like, and I just made a bunch of noises in the microphone for no reason. There you go. If that does it for you, watch this movie. I really do think Goosebumps fans will love this.
If Goosebumps does it for you, watch Trick or Treat. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, Jeff. Well, did you stop to think that maybe we're wrong and we're getting clothes for Christmas?
Maybe we are, Jay. Maybe we are. Although
I don't think we are.
There is a strong. Well, as I've said before, I'm the only real movie critic on Earth, and only my opinion actually matters. But still, there's people out there who talk about this movie, and there's some who really love it and some who really hate it.
That, so I pulled one. one out of 10 review and one 10 out of 10 review, because I'm like, I'm pretty sure both Jeff and I come down maybe about like 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there.
I was going to say, I would give this movie probably a solid 4.
And I think I would maybe lean a little bit more towards 6. And like, yeah. And so I was like, I'm going to pull 1-1 and I'm going to pull 1-10. And those are going to be the two reviews that I have. 1 out of 10. Awful. I do love a good werewolf movie. Sadly, this is not a good werewolf movie. Universal and Hammer have nothing to fear here. Well, good news. Universal's not making werewolf movies. And I'm pretty sure Hammer's not making werewolf movies either. So they didn't have anything to worry about for years now. Universal, the Mummy, Tom Cruise's The Mummy ruined a whole werewolf universe. Anyway, sorry. A lot of people are praising the social messages in this film, but when I watch a horror movie, I want to be scared, jump a few times, and enjoy the escapism for 90 minutes. Overall, there was nothing I liked about this. Acting was mainly awful, the script was very poor and boring, and it made sure I didn't feel anything for them, and I just wanted it to end. So no scares, no jumps, no likable characters, which once again, I think there were some likable characters at least, and a very poor monster that can be hurt with a broken stick. Well, sorry, they put can be hurt with a broken stuck.
Yes, a stuck.
But I believe they meant stick. I could have liked the creature if it killed the cast off in the first 30 minutes, but it struggled on to the end.
Oh, I wanted to say real quick, Jay, have you ever seen Wolfen from 1981?
I'm aware of it.
That Wolfen is basically this movie, but better.
All right, I'll have to check it out.
And it also pioneered the vision thing that they do in Predator, but it did it 7 years earlier.
Ooh.
The wolf vision, yeah.
Very cool.
Those are not werewolves.
Predators aren't werewolves. Or wolfens aren't werewolves?
They're more of a Native American shifter style creature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like Wendy Go.
Yes. Yes, my girlfriend Wendy Go.
All right, anyway, do you got one?
Oh, Jay, do I have one? The Beast of Walton Street feels less like a finished movie and more like a rough draft somebody accidentally uploaded to streaming.
Oh, no.
No. It's one of those indie horror films where every scene stretches on forever because nobody had the budget to shoot enough actual story. The movie opens with an interesting premise, a werewolf stalking homeless people while the city ignores the murder, but then spends most of its runtime trapped in endless conversations inside abandoned buildings, lit like someone forgot to pay the electric bill. Characters mumble through scenes that feel improvised while the plot crawls forward at the speed of frozen molasses. And the werewolf, barely in the movie. For a film literally called The Beast of Walton Street, the beast seems contractually obligated to appear for maybe 7 minutes total. The rest is characters smoking cigarettes, arguing, staring into the distance, or talking about leaving town with their girlfriend, who we don't know and never meet. The pacing is absolutely brutal. There are stretches where it feels like nothing happens for 20 minutes except ambiance and people looking tired. Even the attacks are shot so off-camera and so dark and so chaotically edited you can barely tell what's going on. The practical effects do occasionally show promise, and the werewolf costume itself looks like it was fairly well put together, and they do their best. Every time the creature appears, the movie desperately cuts away before you get a good look at it, which honestly might have been the smartest decision the filmmakers made.
Yeah, if you don't have the budget to actually show a cool werewolf, hide it as best you can.
What really hurts is that there is a solid idea buried underneath all this. The concept of society ignoring the murders because the victims are homeless could have made for a genuinely angry, socially conscious horror film. Instead, it uses that idea as background wallpaper while the movie drifts aimlessly from one depressing room to another. By the end, The Beast of Walton Street does not feel scary, tragic, or exciting. It just feels exhausting. A grimy, sluggish creature feature where the audience suffers more than the victims. 0 out of 5.
All right. Once again, kind of like we were saying earlier, good tidings is this story done better.
Yeah.
And British.
British.
Sorry, there were Liverpudlians. And British. There we go. So, as promised, here's a 10 out of 10.
Oh, John.
Werewold, because they spelled wolf incorrectly. Werewold film with depth and bite.
Nice.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to need you to write down this first sentence so we don't forget it when we're talking about this movie.
All right.
The Beast of Walton Street is a horror film about a werewolf.
Ah, good, good.
It centers around two women, Constance and Sketch, who seem to be squatters, living in a car repair shop. They witness a large wolf hanging around a dumpster where the homeless reside and feel compelled to stop it from feasting on more of the homeless population. This film has a lot of societal undertones. It deals with the homeless and the thought of these folks as nothing more than a statistic as they are being eaten by a werewolf. Once again, if there was a cop subplot... about
it would have been better to actually highlight, like, have an authority figure actively not care.
Don't tell us about the authority figures not caring. Actually have someone because do that.
Clearly somebody cares because it's on the news.
You see the struggle the two women go through to get life-saving medication and also a meal. It even deals with topics that have long left society's mind, like AIDS. This story shows that AIDS is still very much prevalent in this part of society. I don't know that that's necessarily what they were going for. I think AIDS was a kind of a punchline.
Yeah, I don't think this is... Again, it's more like a setup, yeah, than it is anything like a message.
Just it's causing people to be like, don't get AIDS.
Yes.
One thing this film does not get into is the origin or really who is the werewolf, as most films in the subgenre seem to have a need to do, and it works.
No.
Sorry, there was not a question mark there. That's my question mark. And it works. We don't need to know who the werewolf is. Disagree. I mean,
you kind of want to know who the werewolf is.
And also, we do know who the werewolf is. It's a creature that exists in a dark alley preying on people. This is some witty dialogue around the sex of the werewolf, which is a nice break from the ominous threat around them. Also, once again, there's two werewolves.
Yes, it's not witty dialogue. There is a male and a female werewolf.
Constance and Sketch have great dynamics to them. It's not clear how they met or their relationship. They are not lovers, even though the mind probably tries to start there.
I love that, Jay. I love in a movie where I have no idea who these characters are or why I should care.
Jeff, if we had watched the webisodes.
Supposedly. We don't even know if that's true.
But they do have a sisterly love and bond, none more evident than when they engage in female breast talk. There is some genuine dialogue between the two, from werewolf mythos to shaving and hygiene.
I mean, did this person actually watch this movie?
I mean,
because it's literally said word for word. Sketch says, well, you would know what my boobs look like if you hadn't friend zoned me.
Yeah.
So there was clearly romantic things in the past.
The tone of the film is bleak and reflects it with a most blue hue through most of the film. Folks in the world have worse than first world problems. Constance steals for her and sketches necessities. On the surface, it probably sings wrong, but in this world of the film, you sympathize. I don't know that it does enough to make you sympathize nor to think that what they're doing is wrong.
I don't really sympathize. I don't think it's wrong, but... I mean, really, she doesn't struggle at all. She jumps the counter and grabs the medicine with no consequences at all. Just, a security guard chases her for a little bit, but then he gets plowed over by a car. And she literally just, like, panhandles her way to a free dinner in a restaurant.
This film is well shot and well directed and has a brisk running time. If you like the sisterly bond of a film like Ginger Snaps, you will definitely like The Beast of Walton Street. Don't remind me of a better movie.
Remind me of a better werewolf movie when you're talking about this movie.
All right, so that was my 10 out of 10, or my 5 out of 5, or whatever.
Like I said, sometimes I really wonder, Jay, if people are watching the same movie that I am. Is there that big a difference in our perceptions?
Could be, I don't know.
I mean, that would explain a lot of the problems with the world, if someone could look at this movie and think that, versus what I thought when I watched it. I finally watched The Beast of Walton Street.
Oh, good.
Thank God. Somebody throw a parade. Because people kept calling it some hidden indie gem.
And it's not like a White Doomsday or a WWF.
Man, this thing is rough in italics. Rough.
this thing is rough. It's rough, bark and chewy.
This movie feels like somebody found $37, a fog machine, and a werewolf mask from Spirit Halloween and decided to make... elevated horror.
I don't think they were trying to be sure, whatever. I'll let you finish.
The pacing is absolutely catastrophic. There are scenes where homeless people sit around talking in abandoned buildings for so long, I genuinely forgot there was a werewolf. I swear there's more footage of people smoking cigarettes and staring into the distance than any actual footage of the beast. The werewolf barely exists. The movie spends 90% of its runtime hiding the creature like it owes money to the lighting department. Every attack scene is edited like they were trying to conceal the fact the werewolf costume looked like wet shag carpet with teeth glued to it. What kills me is the premise is actually good. A werewolf targeting homeless people? That's a pretty solid concept. I mean, it would take a while before anybody realized what's up. But 36 people go missing and no one even bothers to investigate? The dialogue feels improvised half the time. We gotta get out of here. Yeah, it's cold. Yeah, Oscar-worthy stuff, folks. I mean, I don't think anybody was thinking this is going to be an Oscar movie. And before the indie horror defenders show up, well, it's actually more about the atmosphere. Brother, the atmosphere is Ohio.
there's our description for the episode.
Yes. The funniest part is that every review calls it gritty when what they really mean is they didn't have enough money to shoot another take. There's maybe shoot one where people don't look at the camera, or maybe they don't talk over each other. But no, we'll just plow ahead. There's probably a decent 40-minute werewolf movie trapped inside this thing somewhere, but instead it feels like a feature-length student film somebody uploaded directly to Tubi at 3 a.m. Absolute zero-star experience. Would rather be hunted by the Beast of Walton Street than watch it again.
I mean, yeah, you just shove a stick at it.
I mean, honestly, of all the movie monsters we've seen so far, I'm pretty sure this is the easiest to defeat. I think it's even easier than the Nutcracker from Nutcracker Massacre.
Well, Jeff, this leads right into it. Naughty list.
Low.
Low. Pretty low.
I'm pretty sure Terrence Shade could beat this thing.
If he had a stick.
All you have to do is stab it with a stick.
I never thought a werewolf might be the lowest thing on our list.
I mean, it's a sad day. It really is. But yeah, I mean, I could see any person, as long as they're not surprised by this thing, could beat it.
Yeah, Beast of Walton Street, your bottom of the list.
Yep. Enjoy your time down there.
It killed 36 people, but when you have a stick, it's pretty easy to stop.
I was going to say, damn, it's a shame none of those 36 people had a stick handy, Jay. Or any kind of bludgeoning object or anything like that. Could have saved a lot of lives.
Well, Jeff, as you know, it's the summer of soda, so it's time for this.
Garbage day!
Huh?
No!
Brother, this podcast is Ohio.
More Japanese sodas!
Yeah!
Mirinda fruit flavored soda.
Mm. That's my favorite fruit flavored. Non-specific fruit.
It's Mirinda.
Yes. What is a Mirinda?
She was one of the girls on Sex and the City.
Oh, okay.
You know, Mirinda.
Oh, man. We had to drink Mirinda flavor. Ugh.
And then I'm assuming raspberry Pepsi zero sugar.
That's what it looks like.
All right. So we'll give these a try.
Just had to be Pepsi again, didn't it?
And I blame the fucking whatever. Fucking.
Well, hopefully it doesn't taste like dirt like the bamboo one.
I bet this one will be better.
I hope so. Which one do you want to do first?
Let's do raspberry Pepsi.
All right, let's get it out of the way.
Oh my god, I think maybe got a little fizz.
Yep. Not too much scent, really. Just average Pepsi.
Huh. There's something kind of coming through from that.
Yeah, I mean, not really getting too much berry.
Pepsi Cola Soda Raspberry Flavor. I just read the label. Turns out reading the label sometimes helps.
I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm not really getting a whole lot of anything.
It's not bad, but yeah, like it's very light raspberry flavor, if any at all.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what Miranda is up to.
Say, let's find out if Miranda tastes good still.
Miranda fruit flavored soda, White Phoenix peach flavor.
Ooh, that might actually be pretty good. I do love peach flavored things.
Ooh, smells very peachy.
Mm, yeah.
Do you think that's Miranda? Do you think that little Kirby looking weirdo mean, with the dot on their head?
Must be. Oh, now come to think of it, she is holding up a peach too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Very peachy.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And very light. I like that.
I was afraid it was going to be like an overwhelming artificial peach flavor, like peach flavored stuff here tends to be. But no, it's actually pretty refreshing. I could see myself reaching for one of these on a summer day.
Yeah, it's almost like a peach flavored water, like sparkling water, without the sparklings. There's absolutely no carbonation.
No,
I think yours looks like maybe it has a bit more carbonation than mine does.
Mine's got some, but no, I think it's pretty good. Definitely a lot more of the flavor coming through than the Pepsi too.
Well, if you get a listeners, I guess take that as. If you see Miranda on the street.
If you find yourself in Japan and run across Miranda.
Get Miranda Peach. Don't get Raspberry Pepsi Zero.
Yeah. I mean, it was Pepsi, so we weren't expecting a lot, but still.
Our expectations for you were low, but holy fuck.
Yeah. I mean, you could at least pretend there's raspberry flavor in there.
If you want to get in touch with us on social media, tell us your thoughts on The Beast of Walton Street. We're on social media at Horror4Holidays. That's horror, the number 4 holidays in all the places. Send us an email, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com.
YouTube.com/horrorfortheholidays for all your audio backups. Throw us a like on there. Catch us on all of the podcatchers of your choice. Leave us a 5-star review. Of course, title it 0 stars if I could, so we know you're a real sicko who listens to the show. I mean, basically our strongest viewership seems to be on Apple Podcasts, although we got a sizable group on Spotify too. But yeah, I mean, anything you can do, throw us out. Even if you just leave a 5-star review and don't write anything, still helps bump us up in the algorithm.
Oh, I will say, our listener, I don't know, still goes as Batsy Klein, which is a great name. Sent us this hilarious video on TikTok.
That is pretty good.
I don't know if people could hear that, but it was a guy saying Mother's Day, and then he shoots someone like Garbage Day, and he's dressed like a mom. It was really, really funny. And then the guy who gets shot says, "I swear I was gonna call."
Yep.
Classic. Very funny.
Go see your mother, you animal.
Yeah. Even if he sent us something silly like that, like Batsy Klein did, great stuff.
Indeed.
Appreciate it. What's the thing? Oh yeah. Christmas Podcast Network. We appreciate them for,
continuing to tolerate our presence on their platform.
Yeah. They're sitting there, they're looking at the numbers and then they're like scrolling to the bottom of the page. Podcasts that like only have one episode are doing better numbers than Horror for the Holidays.
No, actually, I talked to our rep at the Christmas Podcast Network the other day, Jay. He's actually hoping we could make less podcasts. In fact, and he also said that it's really draining their legal defense budget, these things from Matthew Broderick. So
Matthew Broderick, we're going to fight this to the end.
Yeah. I mean, we told the truth. We got nothing to fear.
Speaking of Matthew Broderick, I saw a video of someone like in the United Kingdom driving and singing a song, and then someone came driving on the wrong side of the road, and literally I was just like, they let Matthew Broderick out on the road again?
Damn.
Anyway, Christmas Podcast Network. Go, nothing to do with Matthew Broderick. Christmas Podcast Network. Go give them a listen.
Go check out Jerry D's show, Totally Rad Christmas. Even though we were not a double award-winning podcast, and he should have rigged the results to make us get a second award.
Should have, absolutely. I agree.
After all the times we blood beat together, and this is how he repays us.
I would say go check out, I held on to it for a while and just listened to it to the other day, the Weird Christmas Conthology. Craig Kringle over at Weird Christmas used to do like a contest every year, like a flash fiction contest. But this year just made it more of like an anthology show where he just like did a bunch of the stories. Some of the stories on that were really, really good. Cool. So go check that out if you're looking for something to listen to. Check out Weird Christmas, one of the kind of inspirations for this show. Other than that, we'll see you next week with a stocking stuffer, and then we're gonna be revving our engines because Fat Boy Summer's coming and Jeff and I are hitting the road.
Indeed we are, sir. Oh, quick shout out before we go. Thank you to all the fans. We are if we stay on pace, we will pass 25,000 downloads at the end of the month.
Hells yeah. All these people, they're like, man, I gotta get more horror. I gotta get more content. Of that.
I mean, it's such riveting content. How could I live without it in my life?
But anyway, thanks for listening. Like I said, next week, stocking stuffer. In 2 weeks, these fat boys are hitting the road for the summer. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Goodbye.